You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What's up, guys? Jose Youngs here, MMAfighting.com. As you can see, it's a three-man panel this time. With me, as always, is Pete Carroll, the man on the street over in Dublin. He's did excellent work on the Bellator 240 and the Bellator Dublin card. But joining us for our first three-man episode, Brave CF flyweight, Jose Shorty Torres. I've interviewed him a handful of times pre-MMA fighting. We've done a lot of fun videos, but first of all, Shorty, I have to ask, what's going on with this mask you got going?
So I felt like, you know, I've been overworking myself. I'm pretty sure this mask has to be 40, 50 pounds. And I mean, just setting up, I am a little exhausted, so I'm definitely going to take this off. But yesterday, there was a sparring accident, and I don't even know if that's an accident when you take a flying knee, but I ended up taking like an Air Jordan of the flying knees, and bam, I'm looking pretty.
It looks good.
You know, so I got some color in, but yeah, I got 5 weeks, so I'm definitely no cuts, no anything, just a nice little bruising. But yeah, man, it's it sucks, but it's part of the sport.
PT, have you ever taken a flying knee to the face?
I did in like a jiu-jitsu thing, so he wasn't actually trying to catch me with a flying knee, but it just kind of happened like that. I think he like sprawled on me when I was kind of coming in his legs, and I got kneed in the face that way. He actually got a full-on knee in the face.
So I am officially the only one on this three-man panel that has not been kneed in the face. I don't want to speak for Brian Kelleher or Uriah Faber or Big E of the WWE, but Shorty, you might be the first guest we've had that's taken a flying knee to the face like that. But anyway, as always, this is not our podcast. This is the fans' podcast. They're going to send us in questions on Twitter, the site, videos, whatever you guys know the drill. I've said this 1,000 times. So without further ado, Casey is standing on the side. He's picked some of the better questions you sent in. Some of them, I'm sure, specifically for Shorty. But without further ado, Casey, what's the first question we got? As it is teed up from Sean Denny at Denny Rants on Twitter, longtime commenter, longtime tweeter, hashtag the A-side. What do you do for recovery after an event? I'm sure he is much more interested in what Shorty Torres does but in terms of recovering from an event. So I'll start with you, Shorty. Typical fight, how do you recover?
Man, I should probably talk about me recovering from practice right now. after an event, honestly, the biggest thing for me is it's a relief of stress, depending on the injury, of course. I mean, I've had broken hands. I've had torn MCL. I've had multiple concussions, sadly. I've, you know, been TKO'd once. It depends on the event. But for me, I'm literally trying my best to get away and seclude myself and just sleep. You know, you deal with 2-3 months of stress, media, this, that, bumps and bruises or flying knees, whatever the case may be. You know, you just want to get away, man, and just hibernate for 2-3 days. So for me, the biggest thing is sleep and definitely non-nutrition approved meals.
What are the meals, though? Can I ask you what exactly I'm fascinated by this. When you guys don't eat for so long, I'm always like, what do they eat immediately after the fight? Like, I'm absolutely fixated on it. Go into as much detail as you possibly can, please.
So I know for one fight, my nutritionist and I immediately, because there's no Krispy Kremes in Chicago. They're like, usually it stands, but there's no actual store. So when we were in Florida and I had a fight, I was like, dude, after this fight, we're both eating a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts. Like, I don't care. This is the first thing that's going to be there. So whatever we can find. For me, I love Chicago. Jose, you know, has been in Chicago before. It is a mecca of food. So tacos, burgers, pizza. And I literally, yes. it's like fight week. I'm usually in the sauna a lot. So fight week, I'm just on my phone in the sauna relaxing. And it's like food porn. That's all I'm watching. And then I'm just creating a list of like, damn, I got 5 days for this. All right, cool. Swiping up, putting it on my notes. Cool, I'm going to this place. I'm like travel channeling all my food. I'm like, I'm in this area. Cool, I'm going to get, and I break everything down. And then for me, being a little more popular, I'm like, let me just hit up some of these restaurants, see if I can exchange a free meal for publicity. And dude, it just ends up working out beautifully.
This is what it's all about for me, man. This is why I'd want to be just a professional fighter for a day so I could get, try and get free food. But I think you probably have to build up a bit of a name for yourself first so I wouldn't have too much success.
I remember...
Dude, sometimes people don't even ask. You just walk up with the belt and they're like, I don't know who you are, but I like you. Here's this. And you're like, oh, okay, cool.
So just get a belt is what you're telling me. Forget about actually fighting. Just get myself a championship belt and walk around the place.
Dude, my brother looks just like me besides the eye part. And... he's 8 years older, but you know he's a little bit thicker. He's a little out of shape. So he would take all my belts. He would take like at least like 2 or 3 of my amateur belts and go to the club and somehow get in for free, get these free drinks. That's I'm amazing. Like, dude, every time I try that, it never works for me. It's just how you wordplay, and he somehow always does it.
Legend.
I remember interviewing Ryan Bader, and he was on Instagram once, and this was like right after he cut a ton of weight to go to 205 on like short notice in Brazil, I think. And then he was looking at Instagram and he saw Bigfoot Silva because he has to cut from like 300 something to like 265. And Bader is like, after he cuts weight and he fights, he wants like something nutritious first because his stomach might be kind of shriveled up or shrunken in or from dehydration. And then he sees Bigfoot going to town on like a bowl of pasta and a large pizza. And he gets like visibly sick looking at it. Like his stomach is like so dehydrated that the thought of eating pizza and pasta, like he goes, I think I'm gonna throw up looking at this photo. And it's just Bigfoot eating. So
Jesus.
The fight game is mental to me, especially when it comes to nutrition.
That's crazy.
But Petey, how do you recover after?
I just get shit faced and you know, hopefully I wake up in a place that's safe.
It's like I get more shit faced during the Then I get more shit faced after the fight, during the fight. You know, it just depends on the day.
Yeah, like how much would you need to catch a buzz after a fight? Alcohol was.
Oh, dude! After a fight, you drink 2 beers, a beer and a half, and that's it.
Well, that's what that's what happened to Bisping.
Really dehydrated, or whatever. Yeah.
That's what happened to Bisping. At UFC 199, when after at the press conference, he like had like 1 or 2 beers, but because he had to cut all that weight in like 11 days, it was like because that was before he knocked out Rockhold, he was like clearly drunk at the press conference. That's when he like said some things he shouldn't have said. He goes, "I'm sorry, guys, I had 1 beer and I got drunk."
it's crazy how like you end up becoming like that pansy where you literally can just drink one and that's it. It's all over. You're like, all right, cool. I'm a cheap date. This is perfect. All right.
I wish it was like that all the time. It'd be great. Just end up melty after one drink. It'd be fucking great.
Casey, next question. And from Nathan Timblin on Twitter, first time commenter. Ooh, some Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder talk. Due to Wilder's poor excuse for his loss versus Fury, blaming it on his outfit. What is the worst excuse you can remember an MMA fighter saying for him or her excuse for losing a fight? The thought to yourself, like, yeah, that's BS. So, Shorty, I'll start with you since you've been around the fight game, you've had first front row experience. What is the worst excuse you've heard from an MMA fighter of why they lost a fight?
I'm trying to think. That is a really, really bad excuse. I do believe there has to be something else behind the scenes that Deontay Wilder doesn't want to point out, because going into the fight, he did look a little different. Besides, one, that outfit was freaking awesome, by the way. But he's like the evil guy in Power Rangers. So it was awesome. But, man, I can't think of any poor excuses. Usually it's like, oh, I was with my girlfriend or significant other before a fight, or I did this, you know, the week before practice, or little things like, oh man, my finger hurt, so it affected the whole fight. It's like, I don't know about that. But when it comes to poor excuses like that, I don't see anything happening like that.
PC, what about you? You've covered maybe not even just UFC or Bellator or anything like that. You've covered a lot of the regional scene over in Europe. What's the worst excuse you've heard after an MMA loss?
I feel like I should have a lot of things I'm thinking of immediately here, but the only thing that I immediately thought of when you said this was BJ Penn and the grease thing with GSP. It's got to be the one of the most infamous excuses anyway. At least, I don't know if you think it's a bad one or not, but it's certainly one that was probably spoken about a lot more than others. And years ago, I don't know if it's an excuse for a loss. It isn't. But Alessio Sakara said he had to pull out of a fight once because he had some bad tuna fish.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
He pulled out of a fight like on the week of a fight, maybe, saying he had some bad tuna fish.
I've heard, I think it was, who was it, Tito Ortiz? It was one of the Forrest Griffin fights where he's like, I fought him with a cracked skull, and that's why I lost. And I was like, that's probably not true because they probably wouldn't let you fight.
Tiki goes in,
didn't he say when he got knocked out, he's like, I didn't get knocked out, I just got cut. But then if you watch the replay, his eyes are clearly like rolled up in the back of his head. I feel like Rampage Jackson has said he was poisoned like 3 or 4 times over in Pride. Pride was a, I'm sure there's a bunch of excuses that are coming from Pride. Man, I think that, was it Diego Sanchez said he ate something bad too when he was down in Mexico or something like that? Or like he had like bad beef tartare, whatever it was, and it like didn't agree with his stomach. A lot of food related things. Like I ate something bad.
That's a big USADA one these days as well. The food trick. That's the one that's getting thrown around an awful lot.
I ate some meat in Mexico and that's it. You know, I had some steroids in it. My bad.
Yeah, didn't Frank.
That was Canelo, right? Canelo as well. Yeah, Canelo had failed a drug test and he had some crazy shit somewhere. You know what I mean? It's the way to go for me. Just go food every time. Anytime they come in, listen. I was in wherever they eat this mad shit. That's what I'd go for every time. I was in Australia. I had some kangaroo. They're on steroids out there. That's what I'd go for.
I travel overseas for my fights now. I don't know what they put in their meat. My bad.
Not your fault as far as I'm concerned.
So I'm gonna say my answer is for sure the Tito Ortiz fighting with a broken skull because. But if you would have said to me like, hey, one of these fighters said they fought with a cracked skull, and they say, who do you think said it? I would be, oh, Tito Ortiz, 100%. Like, I wouldn't even if I didn't know, I'm like, it's probably Tito.
What did you think of that excuse, though, from Wilder? I mean, it seems to be, I don't know. It just feels so strange. And the idea that he's going to punish his corner for stopping that fight, I feel, is crazy, too. I mean, I know he has that big right hand, and, you know, it's like detonating a bomb when it lands correctly, but I felt Fury was absolutely obliterating him in that fight. Like, I mean, I felt every round I had for Tyson. What about you guys?
Yeah, Fury was on point. You know, if it's, for example, a small guy like myself walking in with a 40-pound outfit, all right, maybe, yeah, that 40 pounds, that's more than a quarter of my weight. All right, cool. There's some, some content there, but when you're weighing 230, 240, I think he weighed like 236 something. Dude, 40 pounds isn't anything. Plus, you're fighting a guy who's weighing about 260 something, 270 something. 40 pounds isn't anything. So when it comes to that, I don't know, but I think if he did find it a little bit of a hindrance, he should have just taken it off. You know, maybe it was a poor mistake. Maybe that was the real problem. And then him blaming his corner for not letting them go on his shield. Hey, man, sometimes, you know, we fighters are prideful. You know, going out in your shield, you see those fighters. I think there was three boxers that died last year. Two of them died in the same week because they went out in their shield. And I don't know, the next day they fell asleep and never woke back up. So for the corner to stop the fight, I think it's a smart thing, mainly when you're such a big paycheck, when you're such a big draw. Dude, you're fine. You're going to have another big rematch. And he's already doing the rematch clause, so why not? You're fine. Just don't wear a big outfit like that.
Casey wants to chime in. He messaged me saying, we got to give credit to Tyson Fury for having the foresight to be carried out to the ring to avoid situations.
Yeah, that's true.
It's mind of a champion right there.
Did you guys get that sense? And I know I'm not the first person to bring it up in the MMA community, but like that event, the entrances, the pageantry, like we don't get that as much in MMA because obviously UFC is viewed as the pinnacle of the sport and this Reebok stuff where everyone looks so exactly the same, nearly apart from a few distinct colors maybe or a flag. I mean, that was what I was thinking when I saw these guys walking out. I was like, this feels enormous. It feels like the biggest show on earth. And sometimes I feel like the UFC have completely restricted people from being individuals and showing the different sides of their character, because Fury's entrance and Wilder's entrance are completely different. You can, you know what I mean? You don't even need to see the guys to know how different they are, just the way they present themselves. And when I was watching it, I was like, Jesus, we might never have, like, I know they do big moments, like some McGregor fights and stuff like that, but not as big as that, where every entrance is completely unique and tailored to the one person. Did you get a sense of that at all?
Yeah, they had 100%. That one McGregor fight where they actually had the singer come out, you know, with them. And it was just like, I mean, that was cool because I believe Showtime was starting to do that with Mayweather fights and trying to, you know, upgrade their content. And it was literally just one event. They never did it again. So for us, I think it'd be cool. I mean, I see Brave doing it, KSW. Sometimes Ryzen even does that where, like, you get to come out with some enthusiasm, come out with your own little flair, your own little style. Probably just do it back in the day, but the UFC, you're exactly right. The Reebok deal holds them back, and I feel like the UFC is also afraid that because they're on such bigger networks that they're like, we're afraid of what these fighters are going to come out and do, and it might be too explicit or offend somebody by accident or go past the laws or mess up some of the UFC sponsorships.
Ryzen does afraid it. Of. Sorry, go ahead, Jose.
Ryzen does it pretty good. I mean, if you watch Casey and Esther's videos when they were on the New Year's Eve show, like, they do it. They do a real good, like, MVP walks out of the Naruto, like, gear. You get a lot of that fun stuff. But I remember watching the Fury Wilder entrances, and I'm just like, why does Dana White just hate fun? Like, this is just this is so awesome. Like, watching, like, I see a lot of the MMA people like fans, and I don't want to, I didn't see any of the media, but a lot of, like, the really diehard MMA fans, like, they're complaining about the entrances, like, let's hurry up, let's get to the ring. I'm just like, No way, man. You can have a mariachi band walk you out there, and I'm still going to be 100% there for it. But I don't. They used to have the like, way back in the day, they would have, like, the entrance and stuff. But, like, in Bellator, like, if you go to these big Bellator events, like, the big screen in the background, it cuts off, like, a quarter of the arena. So those are, like, seats they can't sell because they have this giant stage. So maybe that has something to do with it. But then I watched – that was, in my mind, one of the reasons too. But then you have the Fury Wilder fight, and they just came out in the normal side entrance and still had an epic entrance. So no excuse, Dana White. Stop hating fun.
Is there any way that they could be, like – I don't want to accuse them of anything here, but is there any way that they could be, like, not allowing the fighters to become bigger than the brand, so to speak? Like, if the fighter is allowed to be more individual, allowed to appeal to more people with his entrance, is there a fear that the fighter becomes bigger than the UFC, and then the same turn up, you know, they have more leverage then in that sense? I don't know. It just seems like when people do get into power positions in MMA, there seems to be a lot of conflict about it. You know what I mean? Even the likes of McGregor asking for stakes in the company, stuff like this, there seems to be always a big resistance to any talk of that, you know? Never mind it, that the guy is the biggest star that the sport has produced.
You know, it's crazy because when you look at the more popular fighters in MMA, especially in the UFC, they get extra sponsorship deals that are already partnered with the UFC, Body Armor, Monster, whatever other companies. So after, you know, the fight and they do their interview with Joe Rogan, whoever it is, they're holding a Monster can, they're wearing a Reebok shirt, they're doing specific things. So they're specifically making more money, but they're also subliminally making more money for the UFC as well because that's their partner, that's their sponsorship. But there's nothing else to come out with it. So when you say Dana White's like, oh, man, he doesn't like the fun, hey, mate, probably. But it's also a safer investment for him to go, you know what, the only things you guys can show off is what the UFC works with because we need money because now it's a publicly owned business. You know, it's all these stocks, all these things. We need to make money back. And so far, that's what, you know, that's what they're doing.
And some of it, like, I feel like lately Dana White might be – I think it depends on the fighter. Like, Izzy got that epic entrance before UFC 243, where he got to have dancers come out with him and do all that whole thing. Like, we don't get to see that often. Obviously, Mendez and McGregor were they also got their entrance at UFC 189. I think it would have been a bigger deal if that was Aldo. If it was Aldo and McGregor still, because McGregor would have had Sinead O'Connor, and I bet you Dana White would have done everything in his power to get Rihanna to sing out Jose Aldo, because he walks out to her, that song with her and Kanye West. So could have been bigger, still epic, but we're not. Didn't he say he lost, like, a bunch of money, like, doing that too? He goes, it's not cheap to do. But I also think you hit the nail on the head, Pete, where they might be afraid of getting bigger than the brand, because I remember when we're doing, like, the 20th anniversary special of the UFC. They interview Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, and they're like, we weren't buying this company that, like, we weren't buying the fighters and everything. We were buying three letters, UFC. Like, that was his exact quote. And then they built it into, now, I'm sure Shorty Torres gets this all the time. If you're not in the UFC and you say, oh, I'm an MMA fighter, they probably just assume you're in the UFC, half the people that don't cover or watch mixed martial arts. They just, it's like they associate UFC with MMA. That's just how it is. And to a lot of fans, I would imagine.
Dude, it's a huge brand. And even because I was a UFC fighter, they're like, oh, dude, what happened? Why were you cut? It's okay. You'll be back in the UFC one day. And it's like, oh, my dilemma with the UFC and then the whole flyweights, I'm good. Plus, I'm in a really good promotion at Brace CF where I'm actually making more money as well. You know, so it's the whole dilemma of the UFC is the NFL, the MLB, the NHL. So automatically people presume that you're going to be making the most amount of money there. Or one fight, you're making $1 million. So be it, you're probably only making 10 and 10. You know, depending on the type of contract you have. So it's a crazy thing out there. But for lucky for us flyweights, other promotions want us, and other promotions are trying to compete with the UFC. Again, KSW, Brave, Ryzen, all these promotions that are worldwide, or even Bellator. I mean, how many guys from the UFC are now transferring over to Bellator? Sergio Pettis is probably a huge example where he's like, dude, I honestly don't know what's happening with the flyweights. And I'm still at that limbo where I keep on losing to the top guys. So why stay in the UFC when I can make double, if not quadruple, more money in Bellator, and I already have the fame for being a Pettis?
Well, I don't know if you saw that photo that Masvidal posted of him staring someone. It was I don't know who he was staring down against, but it was like a very large black man. And then Masvidal, it was I don't know who it was, but it was like a funny post. And Sergio Pettis commented, and he goes, LOL, my UFC fight purse versus what I make in Bellator. That was his comment photo. So, like,
dude, I mean, rumor has it he's making a lot of money. Like, whatever the UFC is paying him, he's probably making like four times more. Like, he's, again, the respect factor that Bellator has, and plus the way they pay is very different. Like, the UFC gives you so much of a percentage. Bellator is not looking for that type of percentage. Like, you're automatically making this much money, and then we're going to figure out ways for you to make more, because we know that without you, there's no event. But right now, the UFC is such a pinnacle in the sport. They can go, dude, if you don't want to fight for us, we'll cut you. We'll hire somebody else like that.
But if they're taking the rebirth of this flyweight division seriously, I think it's fair to say, Shorty, that everybody would believe that you'd be top of the list to get back in there. If the situation hadn't have been what it was, I don't think you ever would have went. But I mean, the fact that you've gone to Brave CF now and you're making that kind of money, that means if you go back to the UFC, you're going to be open to a whole new set of terms, right? You'd imagine you'd be on even more money because they'd be trying to make it more lucrative for you to come back.
And that's the thing. If I ever would decide to go to the UFC, like right now, Brave is taking care of me very well. And I'm really, really happy because now I can actually talk to important people. It's not like I was able to talk to Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby, Dana White, stuff like that. I'm able to talk to the higher ups here and figure things out one-on-one. I am making more money. They are taking care of me. The contract's awesome. But if I ever were to come back to the UFC, I would have to know that the flyweight division is 100% back intact, and they've signed, I believe there's only 12 guys in the division right now, if not 15 at most. Every single guy in the flyweight division in the UFC right now is ranked, which I think is completely, you know, baffling, because it's like you're signing the UFC and you're automatically ranked. That doesn't make any sense. So it's very unfair for those guys. It gives them the wrong message. And again, I think flyweights, again, I'm a flyweight myself. We are one of the most exciting weight classes out there. We might not have the most knockouts because of our power, but we have an exciting weight class. It just so happens that the UFC wasn't promoting us the way they did. So for me, if they were to call me today, it would 100% be a no. I'm not interested in that, because I need to know that I am 100% safe compared to what I was forced into last time.
That's fair enough, man. I think
and that's more absolutely just me speaking for you know, the other UFC fighters that got released and are trying to go back in. You know, it's like a really bad relationship. It's like, hey, man, I cheated on you a lot and we're done, and I broke up with you, but I still got the side piece in the side. But you still want to come on in? I don't know if I'm gonna, you know, really stay with this, but I love you right now, but I might not love you tomorrow. And it's like, I'm not really sure here.
Well, I'm looking at the UFC roster, and it looks like there's 17 flyweights. But if you take Henry Cejudo out of that, if he doesn't come back to flyweight, and then if I'm assuming Ray Borg's next fight will have to be a bantamweight because he missed the flyweight limit. They are exactly 15. So you would be right. Everyone in flyweight would be ranked if this is the case, because again, there's no champion. And as soon as we figure out who wins on Saturday and that person just becomes champion, that means there's 14 flyweights ranked. So they would be missing the 15th flyweight right there.
But then after this fight, who like, for example, I'm picking Benavidez for this fight.
Sure.
Now, if Benavidez wins, who's going to fight him? He's beat pretty much everyone coming up because he was the main gatekeeper. Dana White didn't want him to fight for the belt because he's already fought for the belt multiple times. But, you know, so who do they want to come down? Cool. They're kind of forced to make this title shot. And who's Benavidez going to fight after this? He already beat Formiga.
I think it would come down to maybe Kaikar France, because they are trying to build up that area of the world, the New Zealand-Australia card. Askar Askarov, who's PT has been a big, big, big fan of. And then maybe Pantoja, because he had that epic fight against Figueiredo back at UFC 240. But you're not wrong. The list is short of people who haven't already fought Joseph Benavidez. He's probably going to have a lot of rematches for a while.
But that's the beauty for the likes of Brave. Like, there's no way that I believe Amir Albazi would be in the UFC if they were taking the division seriously. You've just taken him on. Like, I mean, I think it's great that these other promotions can still make compelling matchups for their titles. You know what I mean? There is the talent out there because the UFC isn't signing up everyone at the moment. As I said, with you and Albazi, that was a really, really elite fight. It's just maybe his name wasn't as big in the US, if you get what I'm saying.
You know, 11-0 guy, and then you look at my tournament, we have Mateos Nicolau, the guy I'm fighting, who was the UFC vet, beat John Moraga, he completely beat Lewis Smolka, and then he lost against Dustin Ortiz. Dustin Ortiz is now in the tournament as well. So you had number three in the UFC lose against Benavidez and get cut because of the loss, which I think is, you know, complete BS. And then now he signed to Brave. You have Zach Mikowski, fun size Mikowski, which is awesome. And he went a split decision. He just won against I can't remember his name, but I believe his last name is Valley Morad, one of the Russians here, the Dagestani guys. And going to split decision with a UFC vet like that, like, you have tough competition in Brave. So doing this tournament, it's a scary, scary tournament. It's all elite guys. And well, Amir Albazi in it as well.
Go ahead, PT. One more thing, because we're getting the signal to move on to the next question.
Go.
AC, cue up the next question, because we could talk about this forever. From... I can't see who commented on it, but I assume this is from the site. It is from Trumbo, longtime commenter. Ooh. Aldo versus Cejudo. A lot of debate on this one on the site. One interesting thing to note here. Frankie fought Aldo for a 145 title, coming off two title losses to Benson at 155, with zero fights at flyweight. So there is a precedent, and it was against Aldo. What do you think of Sterling versus Jan, Moraes versus Sandhagen, while Aldo fights Cejudo, who division shakes out within the next 6 months? So yes, a lot of debate on this when they announced it. I don't know. I'm sure you guys saw Henry Cejudo, former flyweight champ, is now just the former champ flyweight bantamweight, is now just the bantamweight champion, is now taking on Jose Aldo, UFC 250 in Sao Paulo. Jose Aldo is, of course, lost two in a row. He lost to Alexander Volkanovski, current featherweight champion. After that loss, he dropped down to bantamweight, lost to Marlon Moraes in a very close fight. A lot of people thought Jose Aldo should have won, but he's off two losses, is 0-1 at bantamweight, and is now fighting in the main event against Henry Cejudo, a fighter that called out Jose Aldo, even though Marlon Moraes got the official win. So, Shorty, I'll start with you. What do you think of this? I don't want to call it new because it's happened before, but Romero's also getting a title shot off of two losses. It is in the UFC, so maybe rankings don't matter as much as they once did, if they mattered at all. But nonetheless, this has kind of become a thing lately where fighters maybe aren't winning and still getting title shots.
It's a popularity contest, and UFC knows they can make a ton of money having two champions or two former champions fight against each other. So it's a really, really money-making thing. Sorry, guys are coming up here talking. So it's a crazy money-making thing when you have two former champions, or right now, so who are the current champ, fighting against each other. It sucks. Again, Aldo's lost at 45, and then now he's gone down and even lost at 35, but you're going to give him the next title shot. It makes it... When it comes to UFC ranking and stuff like that, it's like, what do I have to do then? Do I have to be the king of Instagram then? Do I have to be the king of Twitter instead of than King in the Ring, you know, or the King of the Cage. So that's the hardest part about this sport. The other two fights, I think, are amazing fights. They're extremely smart fights to see who might be the next one in line. Obviously, Aljamain Sterling's been waiting. Corey Sandhagen's been wanting just to overall get a fight because he was supposed to fight, I believe, Frankie Edgar. And I don't know where they randomly pulled that one out. And, you know, Frankie's he's a popular guy. So he's a UFC veteran, so he can do what he wants. But I believe those two matchups are completely smart. But the Aldo Cejudo is 100% a money-making fight, and I just don't believe it makes the UFC look good at all.
So, PT, I'll pose this question differently. Would this fight be happening if the fight card wasn't in Brazil?
Oh, yeah, probably, to be honest. Like, I mean, I think it's a terrible precedent to set. I feel like Romero is different in a way because there was no natural contender there. Like, no one was like, this guy is the guy that needs to fight the guy, right? But the problem with bantamweight is Piotr Jan's there and Aljamain Sterling's there. And I mean, if we completely start dissolving the sport element of this, it's not going to bode well for the future of the sport as far as I'm concerned. I really have serious issues with this, to be honest. Like, it's kind of like we have a bit of a situation, like a contrasting situation in Europe at the moment where Bellator are here. And they probably have the bigger names on their card. Like, they have the guys with the big Instagram followings, the guys with the huge followings that people know about. But they don't always put them in the most compelling fights. Whereas we have Cage Warriors, which is the proven feeding ground for the UFC here, where those guys are put through hell on earth to get that belt. Like, they are fighting the hardest guy every time. Once you have the belt, the UFC are likely going to sign you. It's very likely. They have had 100 guys nearly go from that promotion to the UFC. So it's very likely if you're wearing the belt that they will come after you. But you have to hold on to that. That's a white knuckle grip on that belt if you want to keep it. And I love that. That's the whole thing for me. Like, the sport element of that is so pure. It's so true. I'd rather watching them events when it's a big Cage Warriors event, it's probably the best event to watch because there's so much on the line. So I feel as though the sport is always the most important. Look at the reason why we're so excited about Wilder and Fury. It's the definite two best guys in the world. Nobody at the weekend thought anything else. We are looking at the two best heavyweight boxers in the world. Yes, they have massive personas. It came together in a perfect way, but that essentially is what we should always be aiming for in combat sports. I feel like the two best guys facing off against each other should always be the pinnacle of the game, and I think it's getting slightly slanted.
Shorty, I'll pose this question then. It's because you are a fighter, Henry Cejudo probably not fighting the most deserving, but if in my mind Jose Aldo is, well, I don't even think in my mind, Jose Aldo is clearly the most popular fighter of all those fighters named, and in Henry Cejudo's mind he is the champion. He might not be fighting for as long as people, he might not be fighting long down the road. He's trying to make the most money possible right now as a champion, because at the end of the day he's a prize fighter and he wants to make a lot of money. So do you hold it against Henry Cejudo as, like, if you were in the bantamweight division and you see Henry Cejudo trying to fight Jose Aldo, are you taking issue with that? Or do you view it as like, well, he's just trying to maximize his earnings right now?
He's 100% trying to maximize his earnings. Again, you look at the persona change, the king of cringe, the guy now doing all these Facebook videos, kind of like Colby Covington and trying to just be out there. I mean, again, you even look at Colby Covington. Look how popular he's gotten throughout the years. Like, when I talked to him, I was like, dude, why do you even, like, do stuff like this? Like, you're popular enough already. How about you go back to the regular you? He goes, because I'm making a lot of money. This makes money. And it's such a smart tactic when you see all these wrestler personas come on in. And he goes, you know what? If I can fight this guy instead that might be, you know, not as talented, but I can make that much more money, then yeah, no, I'm going to do that. It's 100% smart by Cejudo, by Colby, by Connor, by all these guys who talk smack and are, you know, have that power to pick whoever they're going to fight next. But it's just, it's not respectful for the sport, especially if you look at the boxing side. Boxing goes by rankings. They have mandatory title fights. Eventually, oh, hey, man, this guy, he's been waiting. Sorry, you have to fight him next. He's number one or number two or number three, whatever the case may be. They're the most deserving. So for me, I believe in the number. But if it's because of a popularity contest, then go ahead, man, make those Instagram, Twitter, whatever videos and make this a popularity contest and be that guy. Like, look at, you have YouTubers headlining boxing events now. Yeah. They have no boxing experience. And then you see all these kids, teenagers, young adults just paying whatever money to watch these fights. And it's like, what the hell is this? It looks like a sparring match. But this is what the fans want. That's apparently what they need. But I believe what the fighters need, the people who actually are in the sport and taking the beatings and stuff like that, we need to believe in the ranking system. I believe Sterling's next, and I believe Jan's next. And then I believe after that, whoever wins between Corey Sandhagen and Marlon Moraes is next.
I think it's more acceptable when, like, you know, you're in a situation maybe like Jones at light heavyweight, right? Where, I mean, there's no, like, he's beaten so many people. He's nearly cleared out the division. And it's like, well, look, we don't really know who's next in line. So if you want to do a legacy fight against a guy from a different division, I'm all for it. But I just feel like with the natural contenders there, I've just got a bit of an issue with it.
Casey, next question we got as we hit a little past the 30-minute mark.
Woo! Time flies when you're having fun, lads.
From Nathan Timlin. Oh, that same one. From KO Media on Twitter, who's been tweeting at me and Instagramming me a lot this weekend as PT and Niall got into all sorts of hijinks over in Ireland. Beck Rawlings told PT that minutes after re-entering the arena last September, she messaged her manager to book her for February. Georgie also jumped at the chance to fight here. I'm assuming he's talking about in Dublin. Is Dublin now a top place to fight, and will it attract big UFC names in August? Hashtag the A-side. So, PT, I'll start with you since you were in Dublin. I'm sure the arena was absolutely mental. I was watching the scrums after, and it felt like I could feel like the camera shaking from like the crowd above you guys or like off to wherever you guys were based. Is Dublin now... I don't even think now, like, it's been a hot spot. Ever since the emergence of the Irish in MMA, Dublin's kind of been a hot spot to have events, right?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, the thing about Dublin, I guess, for Bellator specifically, is it's the only place that I've been that they've sold out. Like, they sell out there every single time it's there, so it's adding, like, a different level to it. Like, I mean, I don't know about the US, but when I've gone to events in London where MVP's on the top of the card, I just assume they sold out. The last time I was there, I think he did less than 4,000 tickets. Whereas this show in Dublin, when you have like 85 fighters from Dublin on the card and 7,000 fights with all these Irish people on it, like, it's packed. It's people from all these different areas of Ireland coming out to see their fighters. So I believe that kind of energy, you're not going to get at every single event. And the fans really do get behind it. Even though it's a long day of fighting, they're always there giving it socks until the end. So I do feel as though that's... a big thing. I mean, the big names, I feel like we're still the most interest in Ireland is for the Irish names, as in James Gallagher at the top of that card. He got pulled out, and then it was like we were all like, well, is this going to still be able to do it, you know, without him? Like, is this going to still sell tickets? It definitely did, but I don't know. The fact that Bellator have come here so often, and yes, names like Rawlings and Carcanyon were there last time, I feel like they're always going to be able to sell that many tickets with the amount of Irish names they have on the card. So I don't really know if it's giving them the best shove in the back to get bigger names over, if you get what I'm saying.
Shorty, is Dublin a spot that you have circled as a bucket list venue you want to fight at?
It's now becoming, because I have trained with Franz Malambo, James Gallagher, and some of those guys. And even just being able to work with Brave, they're trying to get specific fighters from Dublin, all these different countries, London and Brazil and all these guys, now trying to go to their cities and utilize them and go, you know, we're going to make you fight at home. We're going to give you that opportunity and really utilize a space that really hasn't been utilized yet. Like, London, obviously, has been huge. Vegas has been huge. Madison Square Garden has been huge. When you go to Dublin, a place that hasn't been utilized yet, everyone's like, whoa, there's going to be an event here. Yeah, all of our guys. And they just start, you know, coming on in. It's the same thing with Brave. They've been to 40 countries in, I think it was like 2 years. And like, crazy. I fought in Saudi Arabia, or I fought in Jordan when I fought Amir Abazi. And I was like, yo, this crowd is like, this place is packed. It wasn't a huge, huge arena because they're not used to that. But I was just like, dude, this is epic. It was the same exact thing of a UFC walkout, and it was packed from right in the beginning all the way until the end. And again, like you said, that's a long night. That's 4 or 5 hours of possibly waiting or cheering or blowing out your lungs. Yeah, so it was huge. So I'm like, I'm in the Middle East, a place where, again, I'm not used to being, and I'm like, whoa, this place is packed. And I'm fighting a guy who's, you know, from Iraq. You know, so just the people there, like – even after the fight, like, I was American, they were cool with me, and I had no problem, but it was a fact, like, just like, same thing in Dublin. They were just like, dude, we love our Irish people. We love our people in general. We're going to support you no matter what. And that's what I was, what we were saying off air, like, Americans fighting in America, we don't really care. But when you have an Irish fighting in the States, all of Ireland comes on in. You have a guy from the UK fighting in the States, all of the UK come on in. But it's a little different the opposite way. But over there, man, it's just, there's so much love and support. They respect it all.
They were trying to set up you and Curtis, right? For like, I mean, if Albazi and Curtis were fighting, and we thought, we were like, if Curtis wins, is he good fight Shorty Torres? You know what I mean? So that was really exciting ahead of that, but unfortunately, it didn't go Ryan's way. But he is one of the big ticket sellers in Ireland, so we probably would have had a huge event over here had he done it.
Casey, next question from K. Thank you to KO Media, and thanks for the Instagram. KO Media is trying to set up a fight between me and Niall.
Can I be the referee?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. From Rob Holland, another longtime commenter. Felder in retirement. You think this was the last time we see Paul Felder in there? I think he was just emotional from the loss and the sacrifice. He's too much of a fighter to quit, knowing it was such a close fight. My suggestion, book him against Cowboy and enjoy the fireworks. Loser hangs it up. Well, I can almost guarantee you Paul Felder will not fight Donald Cerrone. I think he's one of the few fighters. I think when Felder was in like that 10 through 5 ranking, he said he will never fight Cowboy and he'll never fight Anthony Pettis because him and Cowboy are former training partners and really close friends. And then him and Anthony Pettis were teammates and training partners. So he's given those two names that he'll never fight. So I can guarantee you he'll never fight Cowboy unless maybe it's for a championship. I bet Cowboy would do it just because Cowboy will fight anyway. He just might not like it. But Shorty, I'll start with you. I don't know if you saw, but Paul Felder might hang it up. Do you think this is just emotions were high, close fight, flew all the way across the world? It's a main event of fight, time away from his family. We've seen this in the past with Stefan Struve and Alexander Gustafsson. Stefan Struve came out of retirement very recently, and now Gustafsson's supposedly coming out of retirement. So is this just emotions were high while Paul Felder said this?
I believe it is emotions are high because, I mean, even the last fight, even though I had to back out, I was ready to let my emotions out regardless if I was going to win or lose, you know, because I'm away from my family, especially my father passing at that time. I'm like, man, I could have spent so much time with my father before he passed or taking care of him or whatever the case may be. So for Paul Felder to have kids and immediately that's the first thing he brought up of, dude, I'm just away from my family. It's not the fight game. It's just what I have to do in the fight game that keeps me away. For him, I do believe he's going to fight again, but it's also the mentality of he's losing important fights. Is he going to get a title shot anytime soon? And when you're in the sport for that long, that's something that you look forward to, but no one wants a fight just a fight. If you need the paycheck, you need the paycheck. But Paul Felder, he has a commentating game. He has a sports analyst game. So he's pretty much, you know, America's version of a Dan Hardy. He's smart enough to where he's like, I can make money on the side. I honestly probably don't even need to fight anymore. Plus with fighting and the commentary, that's just more time away from his family. I do see him doing one or two more fights. It would be awesome to see him fight against Cowboy, but you know, that's a guaranteed no-go. But for me, I believe it's just emotion, man.
PC, what's your take on this? The Irish Dragon, he's obviously not born in Ireland, but you guys kind of have adopted him. Conor McGregor might take issue with that. I'm sure you saw his little tweet response to him. But what did you make of Paul Felder's comments after?
It was a tough watch. Felder's always been a great guy for all the Irish media with his time. But I have to agree with him. I have to agree with Shorty. I mean, there's not many times where you see a guy making that speech in the octagon where he has a ready-made career. You literally know what this guy could do for the rest of his life as he's saying it. You're like, you have a ready-made career. The fans love you on the mic. You're one of the best commentators they have. It's right there if you want to take it. I never want to tell fighters when to retire. That's a very personal thing. But when it's right there, when you can see it and you're like, man, you've done it all. You're going to leave the sport as one of the elite 55ers and go into a commentary job where you're beloved by the fans. I mean, I wouldn't be forcing him out of the decision if that's what he wanted to do, put it that way. But I guess I just don't take any MMA retirements that seriously because they just turn around so quickly.
Well, I can tell you what, like, Stefan Struve, he's managed by the same guy I'm managed by, and, you know, we all kind of stay together in the same household. So when I believe he lost that fight and he's like, all right, cool, I retire, I'm done. It was also the end of his contract. Literally the next day he calls my manager, he goes, all right, okay, I'm kind of reconsidering this. Because, again, it's just the emotions. You just never know. Yeah, sometimes you need 10, 20 minutes, 24 hours to just relax and go, all right, okay, I'm better. Let's do it again.
Well, I mean, credit to Felder for saying this might be the last time. He wants to think about it. So he didn't put a definite, like, I'm going to end this. But the question is still out there. So fair play to him for not actually using, like, this is a wrap for me, saying maybe this will be the end of it. But, Casey, next question. From the seaside. who do you think is next for Volkanovski? So there's obviously Alexander Volkanovski dethroned Max Holloway in December. I was at that fight. Very technical fight, very fun fight to watch. Max Holloway said he thought he won, but Volkanovski got the nod by decision, which I, again, you don't have to quote unquote beat the champ to become the champ. Alexander Volkanovski won fair and square on the judges' scorecards. But that's another conversation. So what do you think is next for Volkanovski? The rumblings are Max Holloway. The Korean Zombie has been calling for that fight. They've been poking fun at each other. Now Henry Cejudo says he wants to fight Alexander Volkanovski, but he wants to fight everyone. Doesn't even matter the gender, apparently. Pete, I'll start with you. What do you think is next for Volkanovski?
It's probably going to be Holloway, right? All signs point towards Holloway. But I do feel, again, this is different than the Aldo situation. I know Aldo was a champion at 45, but, you know, the losses there are like at 135 are not the same as Holloway losing his last fight for the belt, as far as I'm concerned, you know. And it was one of those fights, we often talk about it, Jose, like even though it might have been 50-45 on all the judges' scorecards, it's close 50-45, right? The judges' scorecards might suggest it's a one-sided thing, but it was a very close fight. That Volkanovski was nipping those rounds, and I think that's something that fans sometimes don't acknowledge. You can have a whitewash on the judges' cards that is still a very, very close fight. Yeah.
Those were the definitions of 10-9 rounds for me. But Shorty, what do you think is next for featherweight champ Volkanovski?
I think overall Holloway next. You know, Korean Zombie does put up a good case, but maybe one more match. Who was Korean Zombie's last win over?
Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, Frankie Edgar, which knocked is a good match, but Frankie Edgar was, you know, already kind of in that dwindle of his career, so he wasn't really on the best win streak right now. So for me, I would say Max Holloway. I think that's just the best matchup just because it was so close and how respected Max Holloway is by the UFC, by the fans, and just, again, how close the matchup was. Maybe Volkanovski does it where, you know, it's just a rematch like they gave Aldo twice against Holloway. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact thing. Holloway's just such a respected athlete, especially at 45. Maybe if Holloway loses, bump up to 55 and just stay there because he is such a big guy and he cuts so much weight. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if he wins, obviously keep on defending and see where it goes from there. And there's the blender going off.
Yeah, I think if Korean Zombie had that original fight against Brian Ortega before it fell apart and he had won in the same fashion he did against Frank Edgar, then he would have a bigger case. But featherweight's pretty stacked. We got Zabit out there. We got Yair Rodriguez. I'd love to see those two throw down. Calvin Kattar is roaming around out there, Korean Zombie. So featherweight division is not hurting for big title fights. But that is
– Ryan Hall versus Zombie or something.
Ooh.
Ryan Hall's looking for a fight, right?
Yes, but anyway, Casey wants to move on because he apparently we have an interesting question coming up. But Ryan Hall versus fill in the blank, and I'll watch. I'll put it that way.
Okay, yeah.
Casey, what's your next question we got?
Oh, hey guys, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Look fantastic. It looks like you have a call-in question from a longtime listener, Casey Lydon.
Yeah, just because I had to know because we have an actual fighter on the show right now. Shorty, what is your feeling about open scoring? Do you want to know the score of the fight you're actually in? And the reason I'm actually asking this is because of the Max Holloway situation where Max actually said in his post-fight, he said when the fight ended, he goes, he thought he had won about every round. So, and obviously on some cards, he actually lost every round. So I want to know from you, what do you feel about actually knowing the score of the actual fight while you're fighting it?
I think it'd be amazing, you know, because it changes the whole game plan. If I'm, for For example, if it's a five-round title fight and I've already won three rounds, maybe I don't have to push as hard, or maybe I can take the guy down, hold him down, and play it as safe as possible instead of, you know, moving far away and then actually catching the flying knee, and then there you go, I'm knocked out. So it's the fact of it changes the whole perspective of Max Holloway saying, hey, I'm winning the entire fight, so I'm pushing just as much as I usually do, but you're actually losing. Maybe I could have gone for the knockout. Maybe I could have tried to force a submission. Maybe I could have tried to go on these certain things. So for me, I like the open scoring where I get to know between every single round what's happening. Did I lose that round? Did I win that round? What do I need to do for my coaches after that to be like, cool, what did I lose a round? All right, he was taking me down. He was doing these things. Cool. Then now I know in the second round, obviously I can't get taken down, and that's why he won the first. Cool, let me implement probably my new game. Or if I'm winning, if it's the case where if I'm able to finish him, great, I'm able to finish him. But if it's that close of a fight, hey, man, let me play this safe and move back so I'm not getting caught with anything crazy.
Casey, did that answer your question? This has been an ongoing debate since the John Jones Dominic Reyes fight, where if one of them knew they were down, would they push the pace, like you said? Or like, well, I feel like a lot of this conversation came from that Houston card because of the Andrea Lee Lauren Murphy fight, the Dominic Reyes fight, the James Krause fight. Like, the scoring was so all over the place that this argument of open scoring really kind of, like, especially among the site right now, like, it really became an argument. But I, three round fight, would it, well, like, five round fight, you said, like, you're up three rounds, championship fight, you don't maybe not have to push the pace. There's not a lot of time in a three-round fight, so you would still want to know the score in one of those shorter three-round fights too?
I would still want to know the score in a three-round fight because, again, oh, cool, I'm losing two rounds that third round, man. I just got to go haymaker compared to I actually think I won the first two rounds. Maybe now I'm kind of leaning back a little bit. I'm running away. Wait, I lost this fight? You know, and now I'm in shock. So for me to be able to know between every single round, whether it's a three-round fight, five-round fight, or whatever the case may be, tournament-style thing where it's PFL, two rounds, I'm perfectly fine with that. I actually believe it would make fights a little more intense, especially if there's such close fights like the Kobe Usman right. type of thing. Oh, who won this? Who won that? Now they're making more of a scrap to solidify those rounds because they were just that close.
Yeah, like imagine like Pete, I don't know if you want to chime in, but you say there's a five round fight. All of a sudden it's 2-2 on the judges' scorecards, and all of a sudden you just had two guys throwing heat at each other for 5 minutes at the very end. I'm sure you wouldn't hate that.
No, I mean, like, a lot of the complaints I've seen about this are like, what impact would it have on the crowd? The crowd would riot and stuff like that. But I mean, I feel like we need to have more faith in the fans of the sport. Like, I mean, I've right. been in Dublin watching Irish guys lose fights. It's not like the people in the crowd were thinking they were winning. Like, they can see the fight. They know they're losing. If they were just going to riot, if they thought they lost, surely they'd just hop the cage and start, like, you know, setting the place on fire in the third round. You know, like, I feel like we have to have more faith in the people. Like, if we're going to give it a go, have open minds to it. But certainly, I would hope that Shorty's opinion would be a lot more valuable than mine on this.
I can just
hopefully
imagine the situation of like that James Krause fight where one of the judges scored it for Trevin Giles, and all of a sudden they showed that to the crowd, and the crowd is like, "What in the world was that judge watching?" Like that, a situation like that is super fascinating to me. Like when there's clearly a bad scorecard, like James Krause gets him in a rear naked choke for 4 minutes, and then all of a sudden he loses that round 10-9 on a judge's scorecard. I want to see that reaction from the crowd. Like they clearly know James Krause won, but then a judge gives it to Trevin Giles. Like I want to see that more than like, to me, that's more of a super fascinating situation.
Do you and it might clean up the sport that way too.
It should. What were you saying, PC?
Do you leave the judges' cage side then? Like, is there a risk to the judges here? Security? Like, I mean, honestly, like I mean, I'd love to ask a judge what they thought of that, you know, in terms of, like, there is some great judges out there. Like, I wonder how they feel about it.
Adelaide Bird. We love her.
Oh. The best one.
We don't
great
talk
show, Shorty.
Casey, and next question. We're running up on time. Are you – oh, from Stuart Tuckwell. I'm sure this is a question directly for Shorty. Are you guys surprised the UFC hasn't signed/re-signed some more flyweight fighters after the UFC's decision to keep the division? So, Shorty, you touched upon it a little bit, but are you surprised they haven't gone out and re-signed –
more fighters. Brandon Moreno was one of the big ones that they re-signed for that Mexico card. But you and I spoke about it a little bit when we talked about the when we first broke that Brave CF flyweight tournament. But are you surprised the UFC hasn't gone out and signed more 125ers?
I'm not surprised because, again, it's in that limbo situation where they're still trying to figure out who's going to be the next champion and what they can do with that. You know, if Figueroa wins, you know, could they maybe have a little more contesting fights? Because Figueroa's beaten a handful of guys but hasn't faced everyone. Compared to Benavidez, he's beaten everyone. He's been in the flyweight division for years, so he's fought all the top guys. So now you're probably going to grab a 10 guy or an 11 guy and bring him to fight Benavidez because he hasn't fought him yet. Now it's a John Jones situation. It's just not as exciting. And then now he looks like Demetrius Johnson where he's just demolishing all these guys. So for me, and that was my political bias of when I was released, all the guys who stayed in the UFC were very close to McMaynard or Texas guys, Hawaii guys are around that area that McMaynard closely worked around, LFA, RFA, King of the Cage, stuff like that. You know, you got guys like, for example, Lewis Smolka. Lewis Smolka was on a 4-fight losing streak. That never happens to any male fighter in the UFC. I don't care what weight class you are. Somehow get to finish your contract, get cut, and then fight 3 fights in, like, I think a 2-month span in Hawaii, all super local fights. And then in a last-minute fight, they allow him to bump up to fight in China. It just doesn't make sense, and it's very undeserving. But, again, it's political. It's who you know and what you can do with it. But then you see Brandon Moreno. What card had they signed him for? They signed him for the Mexico card. Has he fought since? From what I know, I don't believe he's fought since. You know, so it's the fact of they're having flyweight fights, but now they're letting these guys finish off their contract and then slowly releasing them. But, again, if they were going to have this resurgence, then they were going to bring possibly 20 more guys or 20 new guys. And right now they haven't. They're, like you said, there's only 17, possibly give or take 15 in the weight class. Every guy's ranked. It's just it's still not – investable yet for the UFC.
PC, are you surprised they haven't signed more flyweights?
Like, I mean, Shardy, like, has described it very well when he's talking about to re-sign with the UFC, he'd need to see the vision they have for the division first. But I think it's had a big effect on, like, the European scene and stuff like that. Like, that, like Cage Warriors I was speaking about earlier, when you have that belt, you become the guy that's next to the UFC, say, from this UK and Irish area. There was a situation where Nathan Grayson defeated Sam Creasy to win that flyweight title, and the breakdown of the division was happening around this time, and Grayson just started refusing to make 125 then. He's like, well, the only reason I'm making 125 here is so I can potentially go on to the UFC, but if they don't have a division anymore, why the hell am I going to put my body through this? He ended up severing his contract with the UFC and going to Bellator and competing as a bantamweight. So I feel like the ramifications the division has had is huge. Like, we still have guys here now in Ireland and the UK that should be, you know, from this region, be knocking on the door of signing at the UFC, like Jake Hadley and guys like this, and Fadeen, who now holds a flyweight title for Cage Warriors. But because we don't know if that pad is going to work for flyweight, it's kind of left everything in limbo. Like, I hope they start signing more flyweights, but and I thought they would, but the longer this goes on, the more I'm starting to question if it's ever going to be the same again.
Casey, next question. From Matt the Donk, a very long-time commenter from even the Luke Thomas days. Fans using the word, quote-unquote, robbery every time there is a close fight. Can people please stop this? How do you all define a robbery? To me, it has to involve a completely indefensible scorecard, i.e. Adelaide Bird's infamous scorecard in Triple G Canelo. Hooker versus Felder was in no shape or form a robbery. It was a great fight, and most of the individual rounds were very close. And at the end of the fight, both fighters were clearly damaged. It definitely could have gone either way, but calling it a robbery cheapens the fight for everyone involved. What say you? So I'm going to start this one because I commented this on our Instagram post. Our coworker Alex Kaylee says this after every close fight. I'm sure you guys all agree, not every close fight is a robbery. It can be closely contested and we can still have a clear winner. We just talked about it on Volkanovski versus Holloway. Was it? No, neither man blew the other one out of the water,
but it was closely contested. But at the end of the day, Volkanovski won, and it wasn't a robbery. It was just a close, good fight. So, Shorty, I'll start with you. What is your definition of robbery, and did we see that on Saturday night in Auckland?
We definitely did not see that on Saturday night, but I think a definition of robbery, which we brought up, the famous judge, is the Triple G Canelo fight, the very first one where you go, dude, Triple G easily won this fight. Yep. It was a close fight, but it wasn't as close as what people were stating. The second fight could have gone a draw. I could see that. I still believe Triple G won it, but that one I could see a draw. But giving all these cards away, and I think there have been scorecards. I think there was one with the John Jones fight where it said Jones won four rounds. And it was like, I don't know. Did you see that? I didn't see that. And even rewatching some of the film, you're like, no, dude, you lost this fight. You know, I mean, I respect Jones to the fullest, but it's like, no, man, I 100% believe Dominic Reyes won three rounds of two. And so be it, it's the way they, you know, the judges see it. I'm not a judge, thank God, because that stuff is ridiculous. But when you have close fights, or again, both guys are completely damaged, there's takedowns, there's this, that, they're both taking shots, whatever the case may be, a close fight's a close fight. I think the fans should enjoy it, and possibly maybe one day, depending on the odds of what the future holds, maybe an inevitable rematch. But yeah, robbery does it does blemish the sport a little bit when you have such entertaining fights that can go back and forth and have an either winner.
Same question for you, Pete. Definition of a robbery, and did we see one on Saturday?
Yeah, like I feel like a lot of people say that when they have their heart in it, when their emotions have been hurt by a result, or whether they have money on it or something like that. a robbery is when it's absolutely inarguable that the, like, based on the criteria that a person has won. Like, you know, I feel like, you know, as well as that, like, everyone always like, oh, the judges in this sport. When you keep saying that, you're making it harder to isolate the bag eggs. You know what I mean? Like, if there is a scorecard, as we mentioned there with Adelaide, with different judges we've seen, with Joe Solis was the last guy, I believe, from MMA that was really called into question. When you're constantly saying, oh, the judges in this sport are stupid, they're all stupid, it gets very hard to isolate the one bad scorecard. You know, it has to be completely inarguable for me if it's a robbery. And it's rare enough, to be honest. You know, even on Saturday night at the 3 Arena, people were arguing over Kiefer Crosby's scorecard and his fight. He fought a lesser-known guy, and there was lots of people saying he lost every round, but I just went to a judge, asked the judge, you know, is it completely inarguable to see it this way? And he gave me three different scorecards he could have had for that fight. You know, it's all depends on what you're looking at, what weight you're putting on certain things. So, yeah, I feel like it's just a lack of education that makes people call robberies, to be honest.
Yeah, we definitely didn't see one on Saturday. There clearly have been robberies in MMA lately in that Houston card. But, like, remember Diego Sanchez and Ross Pearson? I don't know anyone outside of those judges that thought Diego Sanchez won that fight. Or I remember the Jamie Varner, Melvin Gallard fight. Like, one of the judges scored it 30-27, Melvin Gallard. And even Dana, like, that was back when Dana White was doing the vlogs, and they showed him watching the fight, and he's like, who is this judge? Like, you see him back there. So robberies definitely happen. But with that, we are out of time. So I know Pete is on the show all the time, so he knows what's next. But Shorty, as is tradition at the end of the show, you get to talk, plug anything you want, cut any promo you want to do. You can say whatever it doesn't even have to be MMA related. So the floor
is, I'm going to put my mask on, take off my shirt.
do it.
No, man. I just want to say I appreciate all the love and support. Obviously, I backed off from my last fight in the Kingdom of Bahrain. But now we're in this tremendous, huge flyweight tournament, which now is that much more challenging to get the belt. I have to fight three fights to get the belt. I'll be fighting Mateus Nicolau, March 28th in Brazil for Brave, and I'm really, really excited for people in the States. If you want to watch it, it's on Fight TV, FITE.TV. And again, if you want to follow me here on Twitter, Shorty Torres MMA, Jose Shorty Torres on Instagram, and Shorty Torres MMA on Facebook. And lastly, all of my merchandise here, I have my own foundation called the Team Shorty Foundation. 100% of the proceeds, all the sales that are on my website, teamshorty.com. Go to helping kids, teens, and young adults stay inside the gym and off the streets. I sponsor kids with gear. I sponsor parents, allowing multiple children to do monthly memberships in the gym, or sponsor people to do tournaments or fighting events. So, guys, I really appreciate it. I know they appreciate it as well, and I appreciate the love and support, and that's why I say we can, we will. Together, we are a Team Shorty. Thank you so much, guys.
You want to try and top that, Pizzi?
No, I don't really have much going on in my life, to be honest, Shorty.
What about this salt lamp you got going on behind you, Pizzi?
Oh, I got some crystals this week. Hang on.
Shorty, I don't know if you watched the show. First of all, a lot of fans give us
crystals. Where's my earphone gone? I want to say thank you to Anthony, who presented this to me at Bellator Dublin. I don't know how you got it past security guards. I have no idea. Absolutely beautiful. And this one here at the weigh-ins to Amy. My chakras have been lighting up ever since. I've got this bad boy. We contacted the Crystal Queen, tried to find out which it is. I think she did give me about three different options to what it was. So thanks to Amy for this one, Anthony for this one. Crystal Crew forever, baby.
So next
time. I don't got a crystal next to me. I just got some peanut butter, but that's about it.
Like, crunchy that's a crystal. Or creepy?
Everything is actually a crystal if you look hard enough.
I'm 100% a crunchy guy, but I could not find this in crunchy. So crunchy peanut butter, guys, hashtag crunchy peanut butter.
Hashtag crunchy peanut butter. But Jessica, because I know you're watching / listening to this, let's give Shorty a crystal keys to victory. I don't know if you see this, but we have a longtime fan that breaks down fighters, which crystal they need for victory. So Jessica, when you watch this, let's do Shorty a favor and add him to Team Crystal.
Absolutely.
I'm down. I'm 100%. See, I'm part of Power Rangers. They use power crystals. That's down with this.
But with that, you can rewatch this, of course, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAFight. You can see all of Pete's fantastic content from Dublin this past weekend. Shorty Torres plugs all of his absolutely excellent stuff. Shorty, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure you're going to be on a whole lot. You can find us on Twitter at MMAFighting, Instagram at MMAFighting, DOTCOM. You can find us on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, everything. I'm sure Shorty will share it all, especially because he's going to be back eventually, maybe after his next fight. But for Jose, that's PC. That's the other Jose / Shorty Torres, whatever you want to call him. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.